All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we continue on here in the analysis of Genesis 31 through 8, where Rachel reacts to Leah's giving birth to the first four sons of Jacob and gets under jealousy, envy, and initiates a baby war. She does so by first seeking to place the blame of her own failure to conceive and give birth on her husband Jacob. And this in turn causes a reaction from Jacob of righteous indignation as she places the ultimatum on him to give her children or else she dies. And he responds, am I in the place of God? Who do you think I am? God, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb, that is, God's control of conceiving in all aspects of life. Otherwise, in regards to history and all those who exist in history, in regards to his plan. And obviously, he's not having any of this. The doctrine should have been a wake-up call for her. Doctrine should have stopped her dead in her tracks in regards to the approach she's taken in respect to this situation. But it does not slow her down. That is the nature of the sin nature that often, maybe most often sometimes, it will simply look for another avenue to skirt around the reality of doctrine in order to attain to its agenda, its goals, to seek to satisfy its own desires, which obviously will never be totally satiated otherwise in this respect. And in regards to his words, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb, that reflects the fact that she should put her faith in God to pray about this, and as I stated, should obviously get her to start thinking straight in regards to the doctrine here, and to faith rest, and look to God to resolve the situation. But she does not. Just pick up point 29, page 5 of our notes. We have here a clear example of a believer that was unwilling to wait on God to bring something to pass. God has perfect timing in his blessings. And too often we jump under energy of the flesh. We try to create, invent our own situations, circumstances, bring about things, rather than looking truly to God, putting doctrine first, letting doctrine govern and direct us and guide us in regard to our decision making, and waiting upon Him to bring about certain blessings in regards to our life. Now, we've all been there. We've all failed, at least incidentally, in regards to these situations, but yet it does not diminish the importance in regards to otherwise seeking to faith rest and wait upon God, adopting the relaxed mental attitude that gives one the capacity to enjoy life, as we would say, our RMA in that regards. But got to always be stirring things up and chugging along and plowing the field in regards to our own endeavors. And we're doing it under the sin nature, under human viewpoint, and therefore it's truly no the divine good production that's involved with it. Simply just us trying to satisfy our SCA one more time in life. So 30, in ancient Near Eastern times, the practice of surrogate marriages is well documented. Obviously, God's original plan is for one man, one woman constitutes a marriage. The plurality of wives that we see in the Old Testament is God's permissive will. Yeah, there's positive adjusted believers that engage in that activity, but it did nothing to cause them not to finish their course otherwise, and God to continue to bless them in their lives in spite of their failings. And obviously, it's not encouraging to be in misstep in regard to God's plan. It's just recognition that God reads positive volition, and He will otherwise intercede on their behalf in spite of erroneous mistakes we may make in our lives in that vein. So here, 31, Rachel's offering of Bilhah follows the pattern of Sarah with respect to her maid Hagar. Sarah failed to faith rest, failed to truly adhere to and acclimate to God's promise that the promise there, Isaac, would come from Abraham and her. And she gets impatient. Obviously, her and Abraham's test of patience in that respect was a long test of patience. She was 99, Abraham was 100 when finally God blessed them with respect to their children. But obviously, look at the blessing that it was in that respect. But in the meantime, she tried to substitute her maid Hagar, and from Hagar came Ishmael. And that whole story, and we have a similar approach. Again, the pressure of society at the time fed her STA and fed the importance that people placed on wives having children, the matriarchal type of title and situation in that regards. But yet, that is no excuse to circumvent God's plan and to let God exalt us in time. So, 32, where we pick up formally, in both cases, the wives were maladjusted God's plan, unwilling to faith rest, a dominant thing among the patriarchal families. But yet, guess what? They were positive. They're all listed, apart from Rachel, in the Hall of Fame, Hebrews 11. They finished their course. If nothing else, these examples of believers are going to slap every believer in the face that was so self-righteous in their life, thinking that they or others could not achieve God's plan in their life and fulfill it otherwise, in spite of their failings. How often has the SCA stepped in, and obviously one of these things obviously should become very clear to us, but how you wonder how often the SCA has come in and said, well, you know, I'm just not good enough. I can't make it. I'm too much of a sinner. Really? Well, there's going to be a lot of believers that have the prize. They're going to look you square in the eye and say, you're silly. See, of course, at that point in time, you'll recognize it. But I'm preempting that. See. No. Look at the Christ's disciples. I mean, those guys were spiritually goofy during his ministry. They did some things. Paul, he himself said he was of sinners that walked in this world. He is listed among the worst. That guy used to kill Christians. And he was self-righteous. He called himself a Pharisee of Pharisees. You know, that means all these fundies out here, so self-righteous, think that you're going to achieve sinlessness or have this pious attitude of sinlessness, that he even outdid them. A Pharisee is a very legalistic person that has this very deep crust of being perfect and sinless. See, that's their whole deal of keeping the law, see, etc. Now, James says we all stumble in many ways. Solomon, and he knows what he's talking about, says there's not even a righteous man who continually does good and does not sin. The Apostle John says if we are without sin, the truth is not in us, and we're liars. We blaspheme. Of course, John then gives you the remedy when you're a believer and you do sin. That's 1 John 1:9, the rebound technique. So here you have a case of these wives similarly failing to faith rest in life, to wait upon God, and that tends to be an STA trend that comes through the line of Abraham and in the families themselves. All right, 33, moving on here. Now, the euphemistic phrase, euphemism, that you may bear on my knees in regards to Bilha, Leah's maid, Rachel's maid, simply means to give a surrogate birth in my place. That's the English idea. That is, the child will be adopted. To bear on my knees. Well, obviously, Rachel here is going to be the midwife, but the child bearing is to substitute for Rachel. The Hebrew yalad ha-bereke. So 34, it also refers to Rachel acting as a midwife. About some 6,000 years of history almost. I'll give you maybe a century out of that. Women gave birth using midwives. They didn't have to run to the hospital and have a doctor right at their side to have a child. But our society, they frown upon this type of activity. The new improved society of humanity today we live in. Really. I'm not saying don't go to the doctor. I don't teach that way. All I'm doing is showing you the fallacy of thinking that goes on in this world that goes against the very grain of common sense. Our whole society promotes a sickness. Be sick. Go see a doctor. Hurry, 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 hurry. Quick. Yeah. Happier commercials are nothing more than instruments of promoting this idea. Take this pill. Then wither up and die. That's what the pill will do to you. Often. Oh, not all times. There's good things in regards to medical society. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying this mentality that's out there. Midwives, someone who simply assists the woman in regards to giving birth, usually another female. All right, I won't go there. 35. The phrase that through her, children, understood, is literally in the Hebrew that I might build from her, Rachel speaking of Bilha, that I might build from her children. Which is bena men in the Hebrew, simply, emphasizing the importance of the matriarchal role placed on the wife as to the family heritage. Bearer, she might bear on my knees that through her I might build from her, literally, children. That's the idea in the Hebrew. And again, that brings back into focus her seeking to create her own esteem among wives of her time and society. That implicitly shows her energy of the flesh to build something. See, the language there used in that respect. So 36, Jacob, for reasons here not specified, is compliant with his wife's proposal. Now, we're not told why Jacob just, okay, but that's kind of Jacob. It's kind of like his dad. Passive in that sense. And we're not told why he goes along with this. But sometimes when you're infatuated, you don't think rationally in regards to the decisions that you make. But anyway. Anything to make the wife happy, I guess. Jacob, for reasons not specified, is compliant with his wife's proposal. So she gave him her maid Bilha as a wife, and Jacob went into her, another euphemism for sexual intercourse. That's wowing the Thon Lamed Bilha. Shifakah, Lamed Ishashah, Wafo El Jacob. So 37, now Rachel uses the word, Hebrew word, amah, which means made. In verse 3, here is my maid, amah, Bilhah, and that emphasizes Jacob's authority over the servants themselves. He has ultimate authority at the head of the house. Confer 20:17, 21:10, 12, and 13. And then there's a change here to Shifakah, which is also translated maid, a female maid servant, in verse 4. And there, that emphasis emphasizes in verse 4, so she gave him her Shifakah, Bilhah, as a wife. So you see this difference of terms here. The first one emphasizes Jacob's authority over the servants, point 37, and Shifakah in verse 4, noting the servant's relationship of Bilhah to her mistress, having the authority to give her in marriage. The two maids given to the two sisters, Jacob's two wives, were given to them by their father. So there's a little difference of nuance in those two words right there that apart from this context, it would be hard to pick up on. They have a different emphasis of authority in regards to the situation. So that's about as good as I can do there for you. That Shifakah was used back in 16, verses 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, and 8. There was Sarah and Hagar. Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. She had an Egyptian maid, Shifakah, whose name was Hagar. That emphasizes Sarah's authority over Hagar, and it's used throughout that chapter. And then back on simply the word amah for maid, that was seen in back in chapter 20, verse 17. And Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids. So Abimelech the king is seen as the authority there over the same females. But that does not necessitate that they had female authorities over them. Shifakah would have been used in that situation. That's what I've drawn from it in 21, 10, 12, and 13. Therefore she said to Abraham, drive out this maid and her son, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. There, Abraham's authority over Hagar, she relinquishes her authority in the situation. So, for all you Hebrew scholars out there, what word studies may come up with, where it may come in handy later on, I don't know, 12 and 13. If I see it, I'll let you know. All right, 38, like clockwork, Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Bilhah, Yalad, should be Yalad, Lamed, Jacob, Ben. Well, Bilhah doesn't have any trouble having children. Her maid, you would think Rachel would say, wait a second. My sister's popping them out right and left. Now my maid, she immediately gets pregnant. But again, what I don't want you to miss in this is the mindset of these sisters when they go through these tests of how they think after the fact. Because they are leading with human viewpoint. They're leading with their STA. Their conclusions follow the same pattern. See? So that's just the reality of it. So 39, Rachel is thrilled with the new baby boy in verse 6, accepting him as her own. In spite of the reality that she's not having this child, it's her maid that's having this child, her jealousy and envy of her sister having kids. She now has just amplified the situation by throwing her maid into the mix. This is crazy. You know? This is crazy thinking. The SGA thinks crazily. That somehow now she rationalizes all this as this being a great thing. All she did was add another thing to become envious or jealous about. One cool thing about the Bible, it just tells you like it is. It doesn't pull any punches any more than a Bible teaching doesn't pull any punches. Everybody always likes to gloss these things over. Preach like to gloss these things over. No, this is the reality that is part of their lives. And it shows you just how twisted the SCA becomes when it follows human viewpoint in regards to his thinking. So here, she is thrilled with the new baby boy, verse 6, accepting him as her own. As she said, God has vindicated me, has indeed heard my voice and has given me a son. Therefore, she named him Dan. So 40, she draws her happiness from her perceived reasoning as to why the baby was born. God has vindicated me, has indeed heard my voice. Dayan Elohim, Waogam, Shema, Bet, Kol. These are just the vocabulary words of the Hebrew. So 41, Rachel plays on the Hebrew word Dayan, which translated vindicated, naming the boy Dan. Dayan, Dan. Simply transliterated. So 42, now verse 6 indicates that Rachel had been praying about the matter. However, her intent in prayer is obviously highly suspicious. I would put highly in there. It's suspicious. We saw this with Leah. If you lead with human viewpoint, then it's going to mess up even your prayers. You're going to misinterpret things that go on around you, because you are not exposing the light of Bible doctrine on the situation at hand to reveal whatever darkness might otherwise be permeating the scene and then blinding you, see, causing the stumbling to occur. So verse 6 indicates that Rachel had been praying about the matter. However, her intent of prayer is suspicious. 43, that is, she takes the birth as a sign from God that her mental attitude towards her sister and contentious approach to Jacob was somehow all right. I've been vindicated. I had a right to feel that way towards Leah. I had a right to address my authority in such a rebellious way. Now I've been vindicated. God's given me a child. No, He hasn't. He gave Bilhah a child. You're just calling it your child. Obviously, legally, it's fine. We understand that. But that's the reality. I'm trying to keep it all in perspective for us here. So 44, Rachel, like her sister and firstborns, leads with the SCA and human viewpoint. Just a parallel example here. On her second child, Leah, in verse 33 of chapter 29, then she conceived again, bore a son, and said, because the Lord has heard that I am in love. See, if the Lord hears, that implies they've been praying. So you got to pray with the right doctrinal frame of reference. You just can't pray willy-nilly. as most believers do, like God's some Buddha, you rub his belly and good things will happen in your life. So Rachel, like her sister, point 44, and firstborns leads with the SCA in human viewpoint. 45 is based on self-centered reasoning, disregarding the fact that the births are the product of God's plan to bring on the scene the 12 founders of the 12 tribes of Israel. That's the reality of what's going on. God wanted 12 tribes of Israel, and it comes about in this fashion, under his permissive will, that fulfills his sovereign and directive will for his plan of race of people. So 46, again, we see God turning actions occurring under his permissive will into fulfilling his sovereign will. Again, like I used an example in first session, how under his permissive will, he permitted the Jews to kill their very Messiah. And when they did, all they did was fulfill his plan to save the world. You can't thwart God. God's got a plan. He is going to fulfill that plan to a T, every dot and iota of it, throughout history. And people that think somehow it's being circumvented are nothing other than blind in regards to the realities of God and how He operates and what He's capable of doing. So, obviously, the logical conclusion is, if His plan is going to be fulfilled, it seems to me, then the best idea in life is to line up with it. To recognize what that plan is and be a part of it on a positive sense. We're in a positive sense. Forty-seven. Rachel is clearly preoccupied with her own happiness, and is insensitive to anyone else. That's where she's at right now in her life. She's wrapped up under her emotions, under her sin nature, her competitive spirit. And her complete intentions to create her own version of what God's plan is for her life. 48, her superficial happiness was bound to be overturned and was not built on genuine trust in God. Again, her words, "Give me a kid or else I die," becomes prophetic because she dies after giving birth to Benjamin. So, you want to build your happiness on physical things in life? Those very physical things, once removed or otherwise destroyed or diminished in time, so goes your happiness. So goes your inner peace and your comfort that you use those physical things to draw upon rather than truly drawing it from Bible doctrine and your faith in God and His plan for your life. Once one of those things in a relationship screws up, you know, well, there goes the happiness flying out the window. So, just one of those things that we all learned when we grow up spiritually in regards to life, and we start transferring our focus and our energy in regards to doctrine to bring about ultimate results for us in our lives, no matter what else may happen, it cannot rob us of that peace and that comfort and that inner happiness and that inner joy that is always sustained by doctrine. You got to figure Jesus Christ maintained plus H and inner joy and peace even when He was going to the cross to be crucified. How did He have that capacity and ability to do that? Because He was Ho Logos, the Word. He was a complete fulfillment of it. See, that's, he drew upon that solely and explicitly in regard to everything he did. He did not come to do his own will, as he says, but the will of him who sent him. That's God the Father, the planner of the plan. That's what we're after. That's what we're all about. Our local church. See. And God's provided everything we need to have, all the apparatus for perception and other grace assets necessarily to be accomplished at this level in regards to our Christian life. But that means you've got to change your priorities or maintain them, as the case may be, in regards to what is most important in your life. If it's not Bible doctrine, then to that degree, you will not experience what we are dealing with and talking about right here. Like I said earlier, the happiest you'll ever be, the most satisfied you will ever feel, if you like to look at your feelings in life, will only be experienced on doctrine. The rest of it is all superficial. So again, 48, or superficial happiness was bound to be overturned. It is not built on genuine trust in God. It is a test of faith. Put your faith in God. All you got to do is get in fellowship, apply Bible doctrine. Make the application of doctrine as it is, as we are taught in regards to the Scriptures, through the doctrines, verse by verse, etc. Just apply it and stand back and watch the mighty hand of God deliver. See. 49, in rapid succession, a second son, Ben Shani, in the Hebrew, was born to Jacob and his wife, Bilhah. Another opportunity for pause for Rachel. Bam, one, bam, two. What's going on here? The same thing that was going on with her sister. God just blessed him. Bam, 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 bam. Another two. But no. Running under her SDA, her emotions, leading with human viewpoint, she just, once again, misses the mark completely. So 50, upon the birth of the sixth patriarch here, Naphtali, Dan means justice, by the way. Upon the birth of the sixth patriarch, Rachel, once again espouses human viewpoint and silliness in speech. When it sounds silly, just spit out the human viewpoint. 51, she uses terminology here of wrestlings or wrestled. The noun is naphtulim. The verb is phthal here in our verse. With the noun being a hapax, it's only used one time in the Scriptures. And the verb is used rarely. It's used four times. 52, elsewhere the verb is used to describe those who are cunning and the crooked. So in a bad sense. Job 5:13. Job, a real individual, lived back not long after the flood. 5:13. He captures the wise by their own shrewdness, that being God. And the advice of the cunning is quickly thwarted, our term. translated crooked in Psalm 18:26. With the pure, you do show yourself pure. And with the crooked, our term, you do show yourself astute. As cunning and as twisted and as devious as one can be, God can outdo that and do it in a righteous way. Beyond imagination. Like you can fool God somehow. Proverbs 8:8. All the utterances of my mouth are in righteousness. There's nothing crooked, twisted, or perverted in them. Looking at truth, veracity, that which is verbally reputable. In regards to one's speech, that in the truth of Bible doctrine, with all other human viewpoint, that shows you the two avenues: divine viewpoint, human viewpoint of thought that one can appeal to in one's thinking. So 53. Now, only in our verse do we see the idea of wrestle translated in such a way. As Rachel views her struggle with Leah as some type of competition, as she states, "I have wrestled," the verb, "with my sister." So 54, the noun has a root meaning twist from our word phthal. 55, now the English here, mighty, is the Hebrew Elohim, which is God, whether it's a little g or a big G. Used qualitatively. The quality of wrestling has the idea of the power of God behind it. So it's used qualitatively. It's used elsewhere like that in the scriptures. 56, whether intended or not, her words are spiritually satirical, has humor embedded in it, as it reveals her SCA-driven spirit towards her sister as, quote, a twisted god. End quote, denoting her spiritual and emotional struggles within, or together. Her spiritual and emotional struggles together. I have a twisted God with my sister. That is words to describe her STA issues in her own thinking in this regards. In other words, it's not coming from the true divine God. Is coming from the lesser God, the God of this world, human viewpoint. That's where human viewpoint comes from Satan. See? So it's kind of funny in that sense. 57, the name, the meaning of the son's name, Naphtali, is best suited here to our word struggles. So 58. Rachel pictures the believer wrestling in their soul, manifested overtly in their maladjustments in life. Wrestling in their soul, with the SCA getting the better of them, because they are maladjusted, not thinking divine viewpoint, thinking human viewpoint, not overruling the sin nature, but letting it be perpetuated, etc. So the language paints this picture in regards to a believer under these conditions. And obviously, most often, it exposes itself in relationships with others in life. You can either be adjusted to Bible doctrine, or you can be maladjusted, operating under a human viewpoint in your SCA. And when you're doing the latter, then you're basically expressing the twisted God in your life, your STA, which is a byproduct of Satan's temptation in the garden. All this doctrine is just unbelievable how all this fits. 59, her final words, I have indeed prevailed. Gam yakal in Hebrew. Not more than wishful thinking. This wishful thinking. It's the imagination, the deception going on in her mind of what she thinks is being accomplished in her life. Look what I've accomplished. See? I prevailed. Right. Based on the contest, the score is still 4-2. In favor of Leah, and her sons were not surrogates. So where is she coming up with this silliness of thought process? It's coming from her sin nature and unwillingness to align with divine viewpoint in her life. That's what your sin nature does ultimately. In every case, it will lead you down a path of making stupid decisions and then rationalizing it as if they were good. Now, part of growing up spiritually, part of being positive to doctrine, is under the heading of what we refer to as intellectual honesty. That means being honest with yourself to the very core and depths of your soul before God. Even in spite of the fact you may lie to somebody else. You don't lie to God. You don't lie to yourself. Intellectual honesty. You recognize the truth for what it is. People that are intellectually dishonest rationalize and then falsely justify in regards to their actions. All this stuff you see perpetuated in the cosmos, the evils of the world, in our political system, entertainment, and elsewhere, stems from people who are intellectually dishonest, generally speaking. I mean, there can be unbelievers that are intellectually honest. They recognize the truth. But most of the criers, the squeaky wheels, they operate under intellectual dishonesty. They will not be honest with themselves. And they try to feed their intellectual dishonesty, fodder, to others. If she was intellectually honest, she'd recognize, what have I really accomplished here? I've given another person to my husband, Jacob, that he's sharing bedroom time with. And if our suggestion is correct, she talked me into not having sex with her sister, for the time being at least. Well, I'll go have sex with my maid instead. Come on, man, you gotta love this stuff. Believers do this kind of stuff. See? But, take this Bible story and teach it in Sunday school. All right. 61, the SCA, not tempered with Bible doctrine, will distort events in life into something beneficial, when in reality one is actually on the losing end of life. Pursuits in life, those things that we put, all things that we put in priority over Bible doctrine, and we think we're winners. People think they're winners. Look what I've accomplished. Look what I've achieved. Look at this degree I've got. Look at this job and profession I've got. All at the expense of Bible doctrine. Loser. If you don't believe me now, you'll believe me later. If you're a believer, you will stand before Jesus Christ and you'll have red all over your face and resurrection body. Loser. Now, I'm not being mean-spirited. I'm not trying to be anyway. I'm trying to be filled with God the Holy Spirit and spit out the truth. I don't care who you are. That's my mission. That's my ministry. I can't let what people think about me worry me. to somehow be silent and to soften things and gloss things over. No, I have more interest in your soul than that. I love you a hell of a lot deeper than that. Sorry about that. This sister shows just how screwed up and nonsensical a believer becomes when some SCA sin takes over and when commitment with one circumstance is not left in God's hands. 63, in fact, one's thinking can become so distorted they think they are actually representing the sight of God in a matter. That's what religious types do all day long. We're representing God. And all they're doing is giving true Christianity, biblical Christianity, another big black eye. And unbelievers out there in the world, naysayers, and obviously not to cater to their negative volition otherwise, gives them more excuse, more fodder for their own rebellious actions. Look at these Christians. Look what they did. You know, a good case in point is the issue of abortion. Today, what Christians have done on that bandwagon, declaring it as being murder. No, it's not murder. A fetus that is aborted does not have a soul, so it's not a true human being yet. It is simply a living organism. The Bible teaches that. We've been through it very clearly. When the baby is born, when that baby takes that first breath, that's when the life is put into the body. We are unique in regards to our creation. We are higher than the animal world. The animal's life is in its blood. Our life is in our soul. Our soul gives our body life. When you unplug the soul, you unplug life. The temporal body dies. And the body gets that soul. God puts it in there upon the birth of the baby. So whatever else abortion is, it is not murder. But how many Christians are on that bandwagon? Yeah. Let your emotions rule over your life and just throw doctrine out the window. So what we'll all do, we'll just throw doctrine out the window. And we'll get on our bandwagon and we'll go do our thing. Yeah, anyway. Why did that come up? Who knows? 63, in fact, one's thinking can become so distorted they think they're actually represented inside of God in matter. That's why it came up. 64, SCA examples of believers in the Old Testament are stark warnings for believers today to let Bible doctrine orient them in life and not let isolated failings become rationalizations when one does fail otherwise. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us these things. In Jesus' name, amen.